in terms of how you proactively take a job offer from here to here. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about that today. So you might understand, when I get an offer, do I have to worry, oh my God, should I negotiate it? Well, my answer to you is yes, please, just do it, but do it the right way. You know, I tell everyone, none of us here is so special that we can be Jack Welch and be prima donnas, but the company has searched long and hard to find you. And they think you are the right person to pull this spear out of their side. They're in pain now. In a down economy, when someone makes you a job offer and they're hiring you, it's because they have a need. And they think that you are the exact right person to fulfill this need. That is what I call leverage. You have leverage. They want you. They need you. They are already sold on you and your skills and your expertise to solve this problem. So now it's our job to validate the company's decision. So the first thing is just do it. Yes, just negotiate. But it's the how we do it that is very important. If you think back to the Jerry Maguire movie, remember Jerry Maguire, and he's talking with Rod Tidwell. And Rod Tidwell, I don't remember the exact thing. I think I wrote down some of this, but he was saying, basically talking about who's your ambassador of Quan. You know, Tidwell saying, look, man, it's not just the money, but I deserve more than that. I deserve the respect and community and love and the dollars, too. And, you know, he was telling Jerry Maguire that Jerry wasn't doing the right job for him because he was not out there asking just about the money, but he needed to be selling a lot of other things. And this is what I tell my clients, too. When you're out there negotiating, you're on a stage and you're selling a lot of things about yourself. And if you're selling the right things, the money will come. But if you're not selling the right things, then you're going to have a hard time getting the money. Right? And so I think if you look at it that way, like who's your ambassador of Quan when you're doing these deals? And you have to think of it that way. Okay, the company wants you. Think of Wayne Gretzky, think of Michael Jordan, whenever they say things like this, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? So if you don't take a shot on negotiating, if you just say, oh, I'm so grateful I got this offer, I'll just take it. Okay. You know, and I do notice this a lot with my women clients. Statistically, women will undervalue themselves by up to a third. And they don't want to negotiate because they're very fearful. Some studies will say, oh, that's because they're smart and they know they don't want to lose the jobs. But then I'll have men come in, and men are just very aggressive about how they're going to negotiate or how strident they'll be. And actually, they're more successful because they are that way. But I'm not advocating being strident again. What I'm saying is they're just more confident that if they ask, they will receive. So part of what I try to say to women is validate yourself. You are the solution to the problem. The company has picked you. That means they want you. That means you have leverage. So please have some confidence in just doing it. Point number two, the reason that you'll have some confidence in doing it is if you do the research to know what you're worth. And one of the chapters in the book is totally dedicated to doing the research, to knowing what you're worth. I found when I wrote the book that there wasn't a lot out there where people would actually just tell you, okay, go here, go here, go here, and find it. So you have to look at what industry norms are for a job like yours, what regional norms are for a job like yours. And I give you a lot of sites in the book, but there's the... If you can go right online and start with the Bureau of Occupational Standards. And they have an occupational handbook. You can look there. I can't remember all these websites by heart. I might be able to read them. Let's see. I don't know. Monster, Ladders, Pay Scale, Salary, Find Law, Riley Guide, Career Builders. And there's just a bunch of them in there. And then you want to research companies as well. I give you another list of companies, company places to research, because I think it's really important that you know what the heck is going on with these companies today. You're going to go somewhere and they're going to be taken over in 6 months? Do you know what's going on with these places? It's interesting. It's okay if the company gets taken over if you've negotiated a severance package, and then you at least have some leverage. But if you haven't done that and you've relocated, you may really be regretting your decision. Or if you've walked away from a comfortable place where you've been for 14 years and you say, oh my God, I walked away from something comfortable, it's maybe not your best decision. So again, you get confidence because if you know what you're worth, then you know what to ask for. And I think that lack of preparation or research holds a lot of people back so that they're not necessarily confident about what they're doing. Sometimes I buy that information for people, but I don't do that very often. The process that I describe in the book is called a proactive negotiation process, and so often we really cringe if we have to ask for something, but I think that we need to, you know, face the fact that we're really all salesmen. And making the ask is just something that's part of life today. Life is sales, and we're all out there selling. So when I say you get a job offer, part of the proactive negotiation process is the first thing we're going to do is take that offer and analyze it. You get the offer at the end of a day of interviewing, and I have clients who say now it's not just one day of interviewing, it may be 3 days of prolonged interviewing. I don't know if you're in the interviewing stages or not, but some people might have 3 callback days of very long, you know, interviewing. And at the end of the day, be said to them, we'd like to extend an offer to you. And you're totally brain dead at this point. And you say, oh, that's great. When will I receive that offer in writing so I can give it the thoughtful consideration it deserves? To which I say, they might then say, well, we'd like to talk to you right now about it. Do you say, oh, God, no, I'm too tired? No, you can't do that. You say, well, of course, I'd like to hear what you have to say. Mind if I take a few notes? Because right now my mind is so focused on the business, I can't really, you know, I'm not really thinking about the business terms, but I certainly want to hear what you have to say, and then I'll think about it. And when I receive it in writing, I'll respond to you very thoughtfully. You know, your objective is not to get sucked into negotiating it now because you're really, your mind isn't fresh and you're not going to do a good job. But you can't say no, right? You have to be willing to listen. So try and take notes, the objective is get it in writing and ask for a week to look at it. Do you really need a week? Maybe not. But ask for a week because that's a reasonable time. And then perhaps you can work with your advisor, your attorney, or whoever's guiding you and turn it around in a couple days. I try to turn it around in a couple days with people when I'm helping them. But I always ask for a week and then I over-deliver, you know, because that's better. So the first thing we do is analyze it. And I say, well, what's good about the offer? And then what's bad about the offer? And then finally, what's missing? Sometimes that's the most important thing. What's missing? People don't even know. Somebody moved to California and then called and was furious. This was not my client at the time. She called me after she moved to California and said, I learned when I got here that everybody else had their relocation paid except for me. And when I went to HR and I said, why didn't you pay my relocation? They said, well, you never asked. And I was like, now they wouldn't pay. And I was like, well, yeah, because, you know, you never asked. So it was one of those things. It was missing, see, from the original offer, but she didn't notice that it was missing. I don't know how, but she didn't. So that's it. What's good, what's bad, and what's missing. And then after that, the second step of my proactive process is, well, what do I want? What's my wish list? If I could make this the perfect offer for you, what would that perfect offer look like? What would be on it? Would you want more money? A better title? More relocation? Relocation is often on many people's lists. Do you want a severance package? You want to talk about your equity? You know, what do we need? What needs to be on the wish list? And then for every item on the wish list, we have to come up with our WIFM factor. Now that we're in sales, right? I said everybody's in sales. We have to have some WIFM factors. You know what WIFM means? Who needs? Who's my salespeople? Yeah, the what's in for me factors. But when I say me, of course, I don't mean you. When I say WIFM, I mean what's in it for the guy on the other side of the table to give us what we're asking for. Say, you are out there interviewing against me for a job, interviewing with me for a job. And everything you're asking me for, you have to pretend there's a little bubble over my head. And the bubble says WIFM. So every time you ask me for something, you pretend that you see over my head a bubble that says WIFM. And I'm going to give you that if I get an answer to that question. So in other words, well, why should I give you something? What's in it for me to give it to you? So I always say, as we are working out our asks, you know, as we're trying to figure out, well, why should we ask the company for something? Or how are we going to ask the company to give us something? We try to answer that question in a persuasive way. How does giving this to you help the company make money or create value more quickly, reach its goals more quickly? Or how does it make the boss look good? These are WIFM factors. Just simply, like, what's in it for the boss or the hiring manager to give us what we're asking for? There has to be something in it for the company. I try to say, for everything that we want on our wish list, there ought to be a WIFM factor. If we can come up with something, all the better. Sometimes things aren't that big of an ask, and there doesn't have to be a WIFM factor. But generally, it's a good rule to follow. And then when we have our wish list and our WIFM factors, we have to convey our message back to the hiring manager in a way that he can actually hear it. You know, so we have to be respectful of him or her and say, how would he or she like to hear this message come back? I'm a big believer in writing. I don't like to verbally convey messages. And that's because I spent a lot of time in corporate America. And I think if you basically very carefully choose your words, and you pick your words really carefully, and then you convey them to the recruiter. And the recruiter is a mere human being. So therefore, you know, he hears your words and has the best of intentions. It goes through his brain and out his mouth, and the words that he conveys to human resources are just a little bit different. No evil intent, but the words are going to be a little bit different. They will not be your identical words. And then human resources hears what you have to say and conveys those words just a little bit differently, because human resources is, again, a person. Just a little bit differently again to the hiring manager. So three times down the road, your words are not your words. They're different. And I don't want that. I want my message to be very carefully crafted in my exact words. I spend a lot of time picking just exactly the words that I want to use to convey a message. And when I do that, I want the message to go in a written medium that the hiring manager will see and will respond to, because words have emotions and convey emotions and have a way of evoking positive emotional reactions in the reader. And that either gets you a deal or doesn't get you a deal. And that's why it's really important how you do it. And I just spoke to a big conference of recruiters, and someone said to me, Robin, you're all about the nuance. I said, that's what deals are. Deals are nuance. Sometimes you don't know why or how. It's a massage, but that's what makes a deal or breaks a deal. It's how you carefully massage your words. I never use negative words. I only use positive words. I have never yet seen an issue or a problem or a roadblock or a hurdle. I've never seen one. I've represented over 3,000 executives, never had one. It's only something positive, even though I'm going to go back and I'm going to raise all kinds of issues. I've never yet used that word. And similarly, in every letter I go back in, I'm always saying, generally this deal looks good or the offer looks good. Why is that? Because it's an offer. How bad can it look? You want to start off very positively in your communications because why? You're building rapport. A job offer is like someone asking you to get married. It's like a love affair between you and the hiring manager, and you're probably going to spend more time with the hiring manager than you are with a spouse, right? I mean, you work a lot of hours today. So I think you have to nurture the communications and be very respectful in terms of how you send this back. I'm not encouraging an office romance here. I'm just trying to say that I don't think you treat this like I'm going to show people how hardcore I am in terms of how tough a deal I drive. I analyze this to playing tennis. Okay, play tennis with Robin. Okay, you take me out on a tennis court, especially after I just had my new knee replaced. All right, okay, you take me out on the tennis court. If you put me on one side of the net, you might find I'm not the best tennis player in the world. All right, but if you want to keep me on the court with you, what you shouldn't do is serve to me as though you're Andre Agassi, all right? I happen to really like Andre Agassi, all right? But if you do serve to me like Andre Agassi and knock the racket out of my hand, I'm not going to want to stay on the court with you, all right? But I'm the hiring manager. You win in a deal by the longest time you keep me on the court. Your objective is to keep me on the court with you. So even if it's really hard for you, your objective is to hit a forehand to me and make it easy for me to stay on the court and play tennis with you. That's your objective. So make it easy for me to stay on the court and continue to volley with you, because then I'll negotiate longer with you. The longer I stay at the table, the better off you are. So that's my proactive negotiation process. And sometimes people say, oh my God, that's really hard. So one of the things I recommend is, and I do this for men, actually. Women rarely ask me to do this, but men ask me to do this a lot. And very high-level men ask me to do this. Sometimes they ask me to write them scripts. They actually ask me to write them out a script. So I say, play it again, Sam. I say, play it out, Samantha. All right, let's just play it out. Real high-level people, like if they have to go in and have a meeting with a boss, although they will send a letter, sometimes they know they have to have a real meeting, a one-on-one meeting, as a follow-up. And they'll say, write me out a script, or role-play this with me, Robin. And I'll come in and I'll role-play with them. And we'll just do that. And they'll say, how could this possibly go? How could it possibly go? And we'll role-play it several different ways. And that's, that's something that I don't see too much at lower levels, but I figure if it's good for really high-level execs, it's good for the rest of us. And, I just wanted to suggest that might be something, everybody else should consider too. My theory on negotiating is that you should take one very good shot at negotiating a job offer. Take one very, very good shot. You should not have the theory, I'm going to negotiate for five things, and after I get those five things, then I'm going to go back and I'm asked for five more. I do not believe in that at all. I think with a job offer, you take your best shot. And once you do your wish list and we've identified everything you want, we'll know if you're asking for too much. Are you asking for so much that you are going to be like a little piggy that gets fat? Or are you asking for so much they're going to be like a hog that gets slaughtered? We don't want you to be the hog that gets slaughtered, because then they'll say, oh, this is too much. You have to be reasonable in your gut, like, oh, that's too much. Like, are you asking for an extra $15,000 in money, and then down here asking for $1,500 in extra continuing education? I say, take off that $1,500. You don't want them to say no to the $15,000 and yes to the $1,500. I mean, come on. Let's be clear about what we're asking for. And prioritize our asks. We can always hold a few things back in case we don't get the big things that we want, and then we'll have an alternative. But take one really good strategic ask, and if that doesn't work out, then we are prepared with an alternative, and we know, all right, we've got an alternative. Somebody had asked me about a job offer. So I want to make sure I get into that too, but it's a little bit different for the job, excuse me, when you're currently employed. But before I leave that topic and move to job offers, when you have the job offer negotiation, the point of me saying to take one good shot is this. You have to know the difference between being persistent in your negotiations and when you become a pest. And you don't want to become a pest because that's a really bad thing. Legally, a job offer can be withdrawn any time prior to acceptance. And it's not accepted while you're negotiating it. That is not an acceptance. You know, acceptance is when somebody offers you something and you say, I accept. But if you're going back and forth and people say that, oh, Robin, if I negotiated, is there any chance the company will pull the offer off the table? And I say, no, you don't have to worry about that at all. And they say, how can you be so sure? And I said, because the law tells me. It's really easy, you see. It's this easy. If you don't accept what they offer you, if you go back and say, I accept, but you're pulling the offer off the table yourself, you see. Because any time that you make a counteroffer, when you go back and say, I accept, but the law says that's a counteroffer. And the mere operation, by operation of law, that kills the offer. It kills it. So the company could technically say to you, oh, too bad, you killed the offer. We don't have to put it back on the table ever again. Bye. Now, has that ever happened to me in one of my negotiations? Never. Honestly, never. 3,000 employees, never. But the law says it could happen to you. So I have to tell you, it could. The reason it doesn't happen is because what I started out with, the company has searched long and hard to find somebody, the right person for this job, and they have picked you. You are the one they have picked. So they're not likely to throw you away just because you want to come back and negotiate. They're likely to sit at the table and talk to you, provided you come back and be reasonable. But if you're going to come back like a raging bull, throwing papers in the air, this is totally unacceptable. You know, have your people call my people. I only want red M&Ms in the room and Perrier for drinking and, you know, get used to this. This is the way I roll. Then you could expect to have some problems, right? I say that because actually one woman did call me. She didn't live in Philly. She lived in New York. After she had been offered a job and she was acting like quite the prima donna and they pulled the offer from her. But she was quite prima donna-ish about the deal. And I said, well, you know, I hate to tell you, but I can see, what, you know, unfortunately, the way the negotiations were handled, they have now pulled the offer and we would have to struggle mightily to get it back on the table. And I think the love is gone. See, once the love is there, you want to keep the love. You don't want to kill the love because the guy can change his mind and decide not to get married before the nuptials, and that's the problem. That's what happened there, see? So, anyway, that's the important thing that you need to do understand. In all negotiations, there is some risk. I can never give you a formula which says, oh, this is a risk-free negotiation. If you do it my way, you will never, ever have any risk or problems because I can't promise you that. The law says if you want to make any counteroffers, you kill the offer that's on the table. And there is no obligation for the company to ever put it back on again. Now, in actual practice, they do it all the time. And I represent many, many HR professionals, human resources professionals, and they will tell you everything's negotiable. We're not surprised. And in fact, in some, you know, in some levels of executives in some career fields like business development and sales, we expect people to negotiate. And if they don't negotiate, we kind of wonder, did we make the right hire? So honestly, You know, I do think you need to think about that. So, you know, I say if you do the analysis in the book and set your goals high, have your backup options in your pocket, then even if you don't get everything you want in the first offer, you're going to end up way better off when all is said and done. And be glad that you stood up for yourself. I think negotiation is very much a growth experience. And you gain confidence as you do it. It's a learning experience, and I think women are getting much better at it. It's definitely tougher for women to negotiate deals. It really and truly is, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You should definitely do it in a very calculated and smart way. So what happens when you want a raise and you're working and you say, all right, I've already got a job that I want to raise? Well, the same kind of proactive process applies. We're all salesmen, right? We're all salesmen. So as we're working all year long, I tell my kids this too. They're now young adults working. I said, do not expect your boss to pay one bit of attention to you all year long. It is not your boss's job to pay any attention to you. It is your job to pay attention to everything you're doing and keep a log of it and quantify it. You know, what you did, how that reduced risk by percentages, how that saved the company money in actual dollars, how that contributed to the budget or the bottom line in savings, how that met goals, how that helped the boss, the team, the company meet its goals. Everything must be quantified. And then that kind of information should routinely be passed on to the boss. If you have quarterly meetings, if you have monthly meetings, you say, here's some information in preparation for our meeting. I thought you'd like to see some of the things I've been working on lately, you know, and how I've been contributing to the team or the goals or whatever that is. And I think that is your job. And if you have goals or objectives, I think you need to constantly be tracking them, constantly be making sure that you're hitting them. It was very interesting. I just met with a woman who was a senior person working actually for a nonprofit, though, but so surprising that she said to me, well, I was very surprised when we didn't get bonuses because the organization didn't meet its budget, but it would have been nice if I knew that that was part of my goals. And I was so stunned. Of course, I didn't say anything, but I was sort of stunned thinking, isn't that part of everybody's goals? You know, just sort of like all year, every year, isn't what you're doing to sort of help everybody, you know, make sure that you meet your budget or, you know, but I was just surprised that somebody would not know that. But that's what I say in terms of how you ask for a raise. Then when it's time at the end of the year or 3 months before the end of the year, actually, you schedule a meeting and say, I'd like to speak with you about my compensation. You hopefully will have done the research about knowing what your worth is, just like you were going to go out looking for a new job. Know what your worth is in the marketplace. If you were getting a job, I don't know, if you were at a bank, check it out. I have counterculture websites in here, which are really very helpful. The counterculture websites, very helpful. Glassdoor especially, because you can click on the salary tab in Glassdoor and just say you were working at a bank. See what listings are there for, like, Wells Fargo. Click on salaries versus PNC versus Beneficial versus Wall. And click on all the salaries and compare them. Whether they're right or not, I don't know. It's a comparator. And then you can go on all the other sites that I say. And then, better yet, you want to find out, go to LinkedIn in your networks. I'm giving away all this information. Oh, okay, well, go to LinkedIn and find out who has worked different places, or maybe somebody who worked in your organization who no longer works there. Do you know them? Do you know somebody else who knows them, who can connect you to them? Talk to them. Hey, what could I expect in terms of compensation here? And try and get information through networks. people who are willing to talk to you that way. People who no longer work there, provided they're not bound by some sort of non-compete covenant or restriction, might be very willing to share information with you. People in networking groups might be very willing to share information with you about compensation. And that's the way, you can get a lot of good information that you can use and leverage. But you have to be prepared. And then you say, look, I've worked here for X years. I've had good reviews. I've been contributing X percent above goal this year. Or I've been doing the job of two people. I would respectfully request a raise of X percent. That would fit into the market range for this position. And see what they say. And if they say, we can't do that, and say, please take it under consideration, I really think that I deserve it in light of all that I've done, and maybe we can talk about it at our next meeting. Don't just take no for an answer. Just say, please take it under consideration. Let's talk about it again next month. And then if they don't give you what you want, you have to look for another job. And you can stay there for a while, but you have to understand the longer you stay, the behinder you get. And that's very true. All right, other questions? Yeah, she's saying, are you ever able to just make the ask for money based on this is what my living needs are, what I personally require? You could try that as you are going in to a job, but basically they don't, most compensation experts will tell you that they base jobs on a range. A beginning point, a midpoint, an end point, and they pay based on the range and not on personal requirements. Unless you're a real unique bird and they just can't find you, or the job's in, Minot, North Dakota, and they can't get anyone there, and it's really difficult, then they might be able to make an exception. But... I think, it's really what are you going to do for them? And if you can say, look, you're asking me to make a job change, and I already have certain, living standards here, you're asking me to make a change for less money, I can't do it. Yes, then it makes sense. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead with the lanyard.
If you're negotiating with the company, you ask you to make the offer, put together a package of what you want, and you want to include this item bonus, what's the appropriate way to establish that?
Okay, you're negotiating with a company, and you'd like to ask for a signing bonus, right? What's the appropriate way to do that? Well, there are a lot of ways to get a signing bonus. A signing bonus can be to make up for something you had to leave behind. In other words, you had to leave at a time when you couldn't get your bonus for year 2013. Okay, it's October. They're not going to pay it out till March, but you have to leave now. All right, make up my signing bonus for 2013. Could also be you need additional relocation money. It could be that they can't meet you on your base pay. You want more base pay, they can't do it for salary compression reasons, they can make it up there. Could be that you wanted more equity, they can't meet you in the equity, but they can give you a one-time thing in signing bonus. Or it could be just because you want it, and that's what you want. It's a lot of reasons to get a signing bonus. Beware of a signing bonus, though, because it's a one and done. And a lot of times they have recapture provisions, almost always. There's a recapture provision on a signing bonus. sometimes up to 2 years, saying if you leave the employ of the company, then we can recapture that signing bonus, and you have to pay it back, in other words. So I prefer to get as much money in the base pay as I can. Yes, ma'am, go ahead. Well, that is the whole reason to have an employment contract, actually. Actually, I have 2 sample negotiation scripts for severance in the book, actually. So there are a couple reasons you would do that. First of all, if you're relocating, I just say this unequivocally, I would never relocate without a severance package. And I mean never. I would never relocate without a severance package. Because it's a risk that you're taking, right? The other thing is they want you to sign a non-compete. And the non-compete basically protects the company in the company's interests for some period of time after you leave. That keeps you out of working. And I say, oh, okay, well, I understand the company has its concerns and they don't want me to work for some period of time. After I leave, certainly the company has interests it wants to protect, and I don't want to hurt the company. So I, however, have only worked in the pharmaceutical industry for, 26 years, and I still need to work. So how will the company help me transition to my next job while I'm honoring these very restrictive covenants? You ask the question. And then they'll say, oh, well, gee, we didn't think of that. Okay. You have to be careful what you ask for because you may get it. I represented a guy who was the vice president of HR, and he came to me after he was terminated because when he was getting hired, he said he would need a severance package of 6 months, and the company said, okay, sure. And then when he got into his job, he realized that all the other executives at his level had a year of severance. So that's why I don't ask. I don't presume I know the answer, because I just say, well, how would you work with me to transition me to my next job? Maybe they would offer him a year if he hadn't asked for 6 months. But because he asked for 6 months, then when they fired him, they gave him 6 months. And he had to hire me to get him the year because they didn't want to give him the year. And they said, well, you asked for 6 months. So never ask a question you can't take the answer to, see? Yes.
With the larger companies, the multinational companies, at what level do they start negotiating different portions of the package?
Okay, with the larger multinational companies, she's asking at what level do they start negotiating? Well, there's no one answer to that question. It depends on the need, and depends. The companies are all different. So there's really no one answer. Okay. Yes, ma'am? I'll repeat the questions.
Is there anything different ways that you would go about doing that, especially when, they're only going to give you a percentage of your
career? Oh, yeah. Well, if she's saying, if you're negotiating a promotion within your own department, do I have any suggestions, especially when the usual procedure is they're only going to give you a certain percentage promotion? Well, this is just a reflection of the current economy, really, and I think that's true. A lot of times I just had this situation where it was like, we're only going to go 10%, period. That's it. That's it, period. And, made some great arguments, gave some great information, and they just said, sorry, that's it. That's all we're going to do. So there's not a different outcome every time. Sometimes there is a different outcome. What you could try, if they're intractable about this, is, I always say, show me the money. I find that generally if you're preaching to men or high-level women executives who now think like men, is always be as numerical as possible. You cannot go wrong the more numerical you are. And sometimes I find even when I say this to people and then they give me what they think is numerical information, it's not numerical information. I get information and I look at it and I say, no, that is not numerical information. It has to be real numerical information. Real dollars, real percentages, real numbers of growth, like real comparators. I did this last year, I did this year, it's X percent better, X percent to the bottom line, I've driven shareholder growth, I have reduced risk, I have added X to the bottom line, you know, I've made, how are you making your boss look better? I mean, if you could ever answer that question, I mean, you can't be that apparent about it, but you can say, look, I've helped the department meet the goals. You know, I knew what your goals were, and I did everything I could to drive that towards success. Always show that. Shows you're a team player.
Other than the salary, commission, title, office, what are some of the things that you have seen negotiated?
Oh, wow. For everything. Other than salary, title, commissions, office?
Commission, office, parking, the job. What are some things that you have seen that aren't very common?
Well, all kinds of things on relocation, lots of things on equity, vesting of equity. Relocation is a real hot button right now. Just coming back from the International Association of Corporate and Professional Recruiters Conference, they were like all about equity, all about relocation. A lot of executives now do not want to relocate. They're afraid to relocate for fear a job doesn't work out. So, and sometimes the companies aren't in a big hurry for you to relocate in case the job doesn't work out. So sometimes we're working on temporary living for a period of time, trips, satisfactory amounts of trips home, satisfactory, storage. I think that's a big one. Maybe career counseling for the spouse or helping the spouse get acclimated and into a new job. You know, if it's an expatriate thing, then you've got private schools. Why don't you line up at these microphones like these other women are doing, and then I won't be binging around. I'll get people in the right order. That's good.
In her book, Sheryl Sandberg says that she often coaches women in their negotiations to actually invoke pay inequity sometimes, to say, well, I know that oftentimes women are paid less for the same work, so I'm going to have to ask for XYZ. What do you think about that technique? She coaches women to invoke pay inequity, gender pay inequity in negotiations and say, well, you've offered me XYZ amount, but I know that women make, 70 cents on the dollar or whatever that is, so I'm going to ask for this because, right? She says...
I haven't done that. I haven't done that because I'm just so numerical. I believe in doing my research and having a really good numerical sense of what I'm asking for. And I think part of that is because I've done deals for so long and I know so many of the actual companies and the actual jobs and what something should pay that I don't like to guess. To me, that's guesswork. So it wouldn't be my preferred technique. But I guess if you were just, if you didn't really know what you were doing, it's a technique, Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
To piggyback on the previous question about what kinds of things are negotiated, if you have a lateral move to a new company and the pay is the same or perhaps even an increase, is it appropriate to expect the same amount of vacation that you've accrued at your previous job if you've been there 10, 20 years, as opposed to having the vacation time of a new hire, which may only be, 1 or 2 weeks?
Right. I actually, have a scenario for negotiating vacation in there, but vacation is a sensitive thing, and I always caution people about that. I prefer to ask for vacation in terms of what I'm going to do for the company, like everything else. Not the fact that I'm used to necessarily having it, but I say, I fully expect to be very engaged and committed in this job. I expect I'll work a lot of long nights and weekends or, I'll be very involved. I found that if I get a chance, you know, every quarter to refresh and restore with a little time away, I'm very more effective and efficient. Having the 4 weeks of vacation is, you know, important to me so that I'm at my best for the company. Of course, not for me personally, but for the company. Gosh, often I find I don't even get to take it, but psychologically just knowing it's there is important to me, you know. So I would respectfully request that I would have 4 weeks of vacation, or five weeks of vacation, or whatever you're used to having, but I ask it like that, you know. It's, to me, it's sort of how you ask it as opposed to the fact that you used to have it. But now if somebody comes at you with 2 weeks of vacation and you're used to five, I mean, you're going to have to make this argument. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
So my question's about timing. So if you have a job and in this situation, I want to ask for something, and in most I work for a large corporation, and everything happens because I'm setting salaries for people for the next year. We all know how it works, but I want to ask for a special consideration. You know, do I start like putting the bug in my boss's ear now, even though I know, and that's fine, you know, that I have to wait. So, and I know by waiting, it's probably not a good idea. And I guess, but, you know, at what point is it, you know, are you whining versus, you know, is this the right time?
Is every time a good time? Well, do you meet with him regularly?
Yes.
Okay, so you're keeping him informed regularly of your progress.
Yeah.
And then you know when they're starting to do the budgets, right?
Yep.
Well, you got to put that request in when you know okay. They're starting to do the budgets.
Right, so it's never too soon in a way.
Well, when they're starting to do the budgets.
Yeah.
Because that's when they have to start planning, and if you haven't done it by then, you're too late.
Okay. And I'll just comment on the woman who asked about vacation. So I took this job about 18 months ago, and I had 4 weeks vacation. Their offer to me was three. I went back and I said, I'd like you to consider 4 weeks vacation. For the following reasons. I've been in the in this industry for close to 30 years. I've been around for a long time. And, oh, by the way, I don't take sick time to take my children to doctors or things like that. And by having those extra days, I'm able to use that time, and I will never call in sick for you. I don't call in sick. I've called in sick twice in 18 months. And I actually dealt with the HR person, and right then and there she said, that sounds so reasonable to me, I get it. And she said, that's done. And so I was able to get that without even going back. She coughed it up right there on the phone. Mm. So it was one way of, to your point of saying, here's why.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, next question.
My pharmaceutical company has undergone a lot of changes. And there's been a lot of reorg within my own department. And as a result, my boss wound up leaving almost a month ago.
Uh-huh.
So I took on his role along with my original responsibilities. They have no intentions of replacing him, but they also have no intentions of promoting me or giving me more money. So what would you suggest that I do in order to make that happen?
Wow. In 30 seconds or less. Well, I think you need to... I'm sorry? Oh, yes. She's saying to me, her boss left. She's doing the job of two people. They're not going to replace the boss, but they're also not going to promote her. So she's saying, what could she do? You know, and I do think what I would suggest to you... have to smile. Thank you. Sorry, I had to smile. I would suggest that you basically make your argument again. You know, document what you've done and that you're doing the job of two people. How much is his salary? How much is your salary? Put it together. Demonstrate what the savings is and what you've done for the company. And add up the numbers and say, this is how much I save the company this year. Surely I'm worth an increase of, you know, X percent. And I would definitely go for that. And I bet you can find other people in the company getting raises, and why are they getting them and not you? I would say that. Okay.
Yes, I also have a... Let me just bend this down instead of standing on my toes. My question's around change as well in a company. If you know that your company is going through a merger and you have the opportunity to negotiate your title, salary, whatever, with the new company, are these tactics transferable to that, or do you recommend, is there anything additional that you recommend?
Oh, yeah. In other words, if your company's going through a merger, are these tactics that I'm suggesting transferable to negotiating with a company that's merging in?
Yes.
It depends. Is this a private equity firm taking over your company?
Yes.
Good luck. The private equity firm comes in and says, oh, we don't have any money. Oh, my God, we can't pay this. Oh, we don't have any money, right? Oh, and first of all these employment contracts just have to go, or we can't do the deal. Anyway, hope I'm not offending any private equity people, but you all know it's true, okay? The answer is really it depends. It depends on a lot of things. Depends what you're doing, what they need. It's just going to depend on a lot of things. But you have to be analytical, paying attention to what's going on, seeing where the needs are and how you can fill them. Be strategic, maybe have a consultation and see, tell me or whoever you hire what's going on and strategically figure out what you can do to find the leverage. There's leverage in every deal. The key is you just have to find it. You have to find where the leverage is, and then you have to use it in the right way to show people why it's you, why you're the one who can do what they need. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Susie.
Great session, by the way. A lot of great, helpful information.
Thank you.
I just have two quick questions. One is, I'm in the process of interviewing now, so I'm interviewing with two different companies. What if you do your research on your position, your salary, and you find out that you're at the top of your pay scale?
Ah. When you're at the top of your pay scale, that means you are at the top of the skill set, too. So if you are at the top of, in other words, you think they don't want to pay it?
Well, what's your negotiating leverage? They say, well, you're at your top of the pay scale already. I mean,
so they don't want to pay anymore.
To negotiate more money?
Well, you have to look at money as having a lot of different pots. Maybe your money isn't going to all be in base pay then. I mean, I can't say. Maybe you have to look at equity, or you have to look at a higher bonus, or, I don't really know, but maybe are you looking at equity? Because you could look at equity, restricted stock units, maybe a signing bonus or something like that.
Okay, so.
But if you're at the total top, I don't know. Sometimes I don't believe that people are always at the total top, There's always room for a little bit more. Or how about this? All right, how about I get a performance bonus? When I sell X, I get a performance bonus of, X percent of whatever I've sold. And then if I hit another threshold, I get another performance bonus.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. The second question I have is, since I'm interviewing with two separate companies, is it ever advisable to say, well, you're negotiating with one company, and you say, well, I've got an offer on the table already over here, whether you may or may not have one, as a way of leveraging the person the other company that you're interviewing with?
It can work. That can work. If you have, she's saying, can you leverage two offers, one against the other? The answer is it can work. I think you have to do it, in the right way. If you actually have one, I would suggest you say to the other people, or you say to the people who've given you the offer, this is great. Thank you so much for the wonderful offer. I want you to know that I've already made a commitment to, I don't know, if Cisco's made you an offer. Oh, I've already made a commitment to interview with Aeris, and I believe in honoring my commitment, so I really want the offer, but I, really need to go through with this interview because I said I would, and I can't back out on my commitment. So I will get back to you, but I have to follow through with this, And maybe you can hold the offer open longer, and then they're like, oh, my God, we don't want to lose her, Sweeten that offer right away and see if you can get this deal closed. But then I would say if they really sweeten the offer, then maybe you should just take the deal. But there's no one right answer, you see. But I definitely consider having two offers as leverage. to be very nicely used. Okay.
Hi, I work for a very large corporation, and we have a fairly formal, I'll say a very formal, process in which we apply for new jobs. We move about the company, different departments, different types of positions, development, and we have to say what our desired salary is up front when we apply online. And what I'm finding is that I will almost always get what I asked for, plus about $1,000 or so. But they also say it's non-negotiable. What do you do to get past that non-negotiable? Because I think they're
lying.
I think they're lying.
They're lying through their teeth. Do you remember that from The King and I? Not only is it a lie, it is a false lie. Remember that from The King and I? I love that. All right, I got to tell you, this is a million-dollar question. Which of my human resources friends in this room can answer this question? How do you get around that little block on the job application where you have to put a number in there, in which case you're saying, hey, I'm filling out an application. How do I know what number should be in there? Can anyone answer that really and tell us all how to get around that? Yeah? Just leave it blank, leave a zero. Can you just leave a zero? Can you type negotiable in there? Because sometimes some you can, some you can put letters in, okay? Because some you can't put letters in. Because honestly, I don't know how you can do that because you don't really know what the job is going to be. Because I have debated this, I've asked this question, and I'm like, how do you know what the number should be, really? I really don't have the right answer for that. I find it's just a way of screening you out, and then you put a number in there and you don't even know what the number should be. You don't even know at the time you're filling it out.
Yeah, I had some. We kind of know what the pay band is sometimes, or at least we have an idea. And like for a promotion, I was told like find the midpoint of that band and add 10% to that, and then to make sure that's like enough over what you currently make. But I tend to make high in band because I'm a high performer.
Yeah, well, if it were me, I guess before I was applying for a job, I would try and do the salary research online saying, okay, I'm applying for a senior portfolio level 2 job at such and such bank. I would do my counterculture website research, even on glassdoor.com and see what those jobs are paying. And I pick the highest or one of the higher level things, and I put it down. Some people say, oh, well, then maybe that'll keep me from getting the job. And maybe it will. I don't know. But if you want to be paid $75,000 and you're putting $60 down, then you're going to constantly be underpaid and really unhappy.
So sorry. What do you do when they say it's non-negotiable? You say you just insist that you sit down, or?
Well, it depends who you're talking to. Generally I would say, well, could I just have the offer in writing so I can, look it over and give it consideration? And then I would write back to the hiring manager. And if the hiring manager just says it's non-negotiable, then you have to walk away and say, I really love the company. I think it's a great team. I'd love to work with you someday. And I really hope something will open up, in my salary range of $75,000, which is more in line with my skills and ability. And when it does, I really hope you'll call me back because there's nothing I'd like better than to work with you and your team. It would be my dream job. Thank you so much, and I sure hope to work with you in the future. And walk away. It's called doing a walk away. And sometimes in order to get what you want, you have to be willing to show people that you're willing to walk away from it. And I've done that. I've done that 3 times to get a job. It takes a lot of courage to do that. And it shocks the hell out of people. You stand up, shake their hands, thank you so much, it was great meeting you. And they look at you like, what are you doing? I'm saying, I'm leaving, thank you so much, I wish you all the best. If you can hire somebody with my skills and abilities to do this job for that amount of money, you should do it because it's best for the company. And I wish you the best luck, good luck. And they look at me like, who the hell do you think you are? I said, I'm really an entrepreneur, goodbye. No, but I didn't. But I was really nice, and I left, and I got a call back. Come back in. We want to talk to you. The money still wasn't good. I did the same thing. I got a call from the CEO. What is it going to take to make you take this job? Finally, I got the deal. But most people would be just would never have the courage to do that. Okay? Because you don't do a walk away unless you are willing to walk away and never see these people again. And you walk away and say, hey, you should do what's right for you. I respect that. And you walk away. And then if they call you, they call you. If they don't, you say it wasn't meant to be. But that's how you have to feel. That's the only way you have any power.
Thanks. Hi. Could you speak to provisions and offer agreements that talk about employee dispute resolution programs as the exclusive means for resolving any issue that an employee
yes.
has with a company?
The U.S. Supreme Court has consistently upheld them as enforceable.
So if you get an offer agreement like that, can you cross out the word exclusive and write initial?
You can try. You can try.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you can do? Or
you can try and negotiate the deal, but, you know, most companies consistently enforce those.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. I have a book signing at the bookstore at 4 o'clock. I'm going to take these last two questions. If anybody wants to buy the book for $10 in the bookstore, please come down. I will sign it, and I'll answer more questions there. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Hi. I have a two-part question. I was recently informed I am in the process of receiving a promotion. However, the negotiation process is very tedious, whereas the owner likes to hand you a contract and say, okay, well, I need it by the end of the day, no ifs, ands, or buts. In addition, my sales manager has informed me that I am due to receive a higher commission percentage other than another structure within my company. And I know it's faux pas to discuss salaries with other coworkers. What is your opinion on that as well?
I think you should hire somebody to help you with your deal, which is what you should do when you get a promotion. And then you should use the counterculture website suggestions that I said, as well as networking with other people who aren't in the company anymore. You can get in trouble when you go to peers and stuff to ask them about that. They could pull the offer from you if you try to go to people in the company. Now, I mean, unless you have like a really good friend, but I am really leery of this friends at work, because friends get jealous and then they turn you in and then you don't have a promotion and then they do.
The problem is that everyone discusses it with everyone, and the owners know that. And unfortunately, they haven't been able to get around it, but for my manager to approach me and tell me that it's different than someone else, don't discuss it. It's very uncomfortable.
They have told you not to discuss it. I'm just suggesting to you that if you do that, they could pull it from you and you're at risk.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi. If you relocate to another state for a company and they ultimately pay your rental expenses for 2 months,
yeah.
But in the process you lose your bonus because you're leaving in October,
right.
Is it appropriate to, one, ask for your bonus, and number two, still ask for relocation fees?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Put them both on the wish list.
Okay, thank
all
you.
All right, thank you. Thank you all for coming. Thank you. Good job.